Hello, everyone. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is about bad episodes. If you listened to the previous episode of this show at the Wonderland Ballroom, you might think it was good, you might think it was bad. I didn't think it was that good. So what I wanted to do was talk with Meredith, who is also a performer, about bad shows. Before we begin, a few plugs. If you were in Chicago tonight, Meredith's band, The Gunny, has a show at Shuba's. That's almost sold out, so go to that. You, Me, Them, Everybody will be in Atlanta very, very soon on Saturday, May 21st. And then we return to Chicago at the Hungry Brain for the first time in 18 months on Thursday, May 26th. Our June's going to be very interesting. The June 3rd show will be hosted by Norm Corrington. You might have heard him on a wrestling podcast. He's the British guy. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then on Thursday, June 23rd, You, Me, Them, Everybody Live will be at the Kennedy Center. So the Kennedy Center, Atlanta, Chicago, guest hosts, all fun stuff. Without further ado, here's Meredith Ketchel and I on bad shows. All right, I want to do today's show about bad shows because I had a bad show on Friday. It is currently Monday, and I didn't realize it was that bad of a show until I was editing it back. See, now, because I do the show live and because it's recorded for a podcast rather than just a live show, I always know how well I did, and I could judge it critically. A lot of people don't do that. You had shows over the weekend. Meredith, you had shows on Friday and Saturday. My guess is that even if you did record them, you didn't listen back to them and then analyze it.
No, I didn't. I rarely do that. We've talked about this. I hate listening to like my own voice. Like I won't listen to a podcast back that I've done. Or I won't listen to shows that I've done. I just kind of go on like, let's, you know, feel the room or whatever, or like feedback from other comics.
So if a show goes well, you know it went well and no one needs to tell you that.
Right.
But you'll also remember what bits went well.
Yeah, exactly. Or I'll remember like a cadence or something for next time or whatever it happens to be that like made a certain joke work. And it's also like remembering how a certain room reacted, because sometimes, you know, you can do the same thing in two different rooms and they react polar opposite. So
that's the thing about the show that I did on Friday. Now, I had to listen back to the monologue and I cut it to make it sound less horrible listening back.
And okay, but what was the problem?
The audience was the problem.
Okay.
I listened back and I cut about 2 minutes. So I cut one idea of the three ideas I presented in the monologue so it would flow better. But there were still funny parts and it wasn't done poorly. I didn't sound too intoxicated. I didn't sound too unsure of myself. I didn't sound too anything. Nor was I overbearing or self-indulgent. I'm able to look at that from a distance because I have to listen it back. But at a certain point, maybe 5 minutes in, I was like, maybe we just didn't have the audience mic'd up enough. But then when I actually got a laugh, when there was actually a reaction, it was clear. Oh, no, no, no.
The this was fine.
Yeah, the mics are working. I just fucked up. And I never had the crowd for the duration of the show.
It just happens every once in a while.
It's jarring.
Two things. I'm glad to hear that you are somebody that knows that sometimes it is the audience's fault. I don't subscribe to that bullshit that you will win them every time if you're good enough. I don't. There are some people that can, but even the greats fucking bomb sometimes. Like, and it's not their fault.
Sure.
Yeah. Two, I was going to ask, do you go into things like that? Do you kind of like know when you're going to have a bad set beforehand, or does it surprise you afterwards?
I only think I'm going to have a good show or it's going to be whatever. I never think like this is going to suck going into it. Sometimes I'll get there and realize like, oh, this is just not going to play. Fuck it. Let's just go on stage. Like, for example, that Bluegrass Festival I hosted, that's 1,000 people that have no idea who I am. At best, it's going to be pretty good, and at worst, it's going to be, that was a thing that was worth doing. But then it ended up turning out to be the best of the situation, which is still only pretty good. So I knew that going in. Versus, like, a show in a small room, and, like, everyone is there and knows why they're there. You think, like, oh, this is going to be the best. And then, for some reason, usually just 5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's really strange sometimes. I stopped doing the, like, I know this is going to be a bad show when I used to host a show out at Cigars and Stripes in Berwyn, because, like, it was just like, okay, so, like, base level is, like, pretty fucking bad. So, like, let's lower our expectations and be like, hey, if I got through that without getting booed off stage, like, that was pretty solid. And I think that like made me a lot more positive about more shows and being okay with bombing a little bit. It never feels good.
No, it really doesn't. But the previous 2 weeks of shows, like, they both went really, really well. And I think it's like, oh, once you do that third show, you're not even thinking, like, you even have the potential to have a bad show. Which is wrong.
It's so fucking wrong. But, like, I know that high. And you're just like, I am so lovable and my material is incredible.
Yeah.
Why am I not doing this every second of every day? And then you're like, oh, because I'd kill myself, first of all. And it's impossible.
But for this one, the thing that, like, it's still bothering me is, like, on paper, it still works. And listening back, it still worked. It just didn't work for that set of people.
Yeah.
But that means it doesn't, but that also just means it doesn't work, which is disappointing.
Okay.
I'm not saying anything, like, revolutionary here. Like, yeah, of course, not everything is for everyone. But those people chose to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. I mean, like, fucking, you're not wrong in that, like, it should work, but it didn't work for them. Like, whatever, but, like, I don't play well to older crowds. I don't play well to conservative crowds. I don't play well at all. And I just have to, like, know that going in and, like, lower my expectations or be like, you know what, this isn't my intended audience anyway. It's like, they're not going to understand my references. They're not going to know what it's like to date a coke dealer in your 20s. Like, they're just not.
I cut of the, like, I cut, like I said, 2 minutes of, like, of the 10-minute monologue, the 2 minutes I cut was about cocaine and drug use. Because, like, that just didn't play. And I think I only added that in thinking, like, oh, even if they don't like that part, they'll totally, you're in a bar, it's Friday night, you get the idea of people abusing drugs and substances, you should, in theory, laugh at this. So even the easy laughs got nothing. And that was the one part where I was like, oh, I could salvage this monologue with that. It did not work.
Yeah, I've cut mine down to about, like, it's probably one joke that it kind of encapsulates it. But, like, it, the more I tried to work out that material, the more it never works. So maybe it's just certain things don't hit. Friend, like, it's kind of a universal thing for a lot of people.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's also because my wife actually did something really funny before the show. And she, I was like, oh, I got to get ready for the show. I need to leave in a few hours. And I was working on my monologue. And she's like, I'll just write your monologue. And then so she wrote the monologue as a joke. But then that actually got in my head, and here's the bullet point monologue. I posted this on Instagram. Here's the bullet point monologue. Shouting, okay. I like everything in my life. Do better. Trump, Trump, wrestling. Fuck you, do better. Cats, cats, married, yelling, and then introducing the co-host. That's the...
I love it. Yeah.
Insight. But she's completely right. Like, that has been the monologue for the past 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to do a monologue that didn't involve shouting or preaching to the choir, or talking about Trump, or wrestling, or cats, or being married, or yelling. So it was very difficult. It was like, it's like playing basketball, but you can only use your left hand. It was, I did it, I technically did it, I technically made no mistakes, but it just didn't feel bad, just felt different.
Do you think that, had you not listened to it back, that you would feel differently about how it went on Friday?
No, I knew as it was going on. I mean, during the second segment of the show, that's the beauty of doing my show versus a normal stand-up show, is I'm able to talk about that and embrace it. And the audience is somewhat with you. I had an absurdist, like, segment. So I used to have one fake guest every single week or every single episode. So we've had, like, Liam Gallagher from Oasis, blah, blah, blah. Just shit like that, you know, and it's always just, like, some comic playing, whatever. So this time we had a guy, Andrew Bucket, who's a friend of the show. He's been on the show multiple times. He played the role of a meatloaf expert, meatloaf being the singer. That's okay. It. Like, just because we had such a great time the night before DJing, and we played meatloaf, and they ended up dancing with, like, a woman for about a half an hour over the course of only two meatloaf songs at, like, 2 a.m. Like, fun stuff like that, right? And it just didn't land, and his jokes were legit funny, and I listened back, and it's just like, this is going really poorly, but these are really funny jokes. Let's dig the fuck in.
Right.
And I listened back and, like, no, we were right. Those are really funny jokes.
Absolutely. But do you think that they're really funny for you guys because you were in the context and already in the headspace to truly appreciate them? Whereas somebody who wasn't at like a Meatloaf appreciation night the night before and like hanging out with you guys would maybe not really totally be on board, because I've seen that happen over and over and over again where someone tries to bring an inside joke with friends onto a show like yours or like as a themed show and you're just like, what the fuck is happening? We did it once with Hoo Ha where it was Space Jam themed because it was an inside joke between Allie Clayton and Rena Coleman. It was like, well, this was a terrible idea.
Yeah, for sure. The difference is we tried to do some, like, we didn't try to bury it completely, and it was more fun facts versus just like inside jokes. It was just more actually just like him explaining what I find very interesting. Clearly not the forum for that, and I know it. For that specific segment, I knew like there was a time and a place, and we only did it for a handful of minutes. And there was a general weirdness to the night. I think it has to do with DC's been getting rain for like 10 days straight. It was like a sad night. The fact that anyone was there was really nice. I don't know.
Sometimes it's a million different things. You know, currently one of my co-producers is trying to create an algorithm for our show. So every Tuesday he says, what's the weather? Is there sports? Is it a holiday? Is it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Is there something else going on? Is it Pride? Is it after Easter? Blah, blah, blah. And he's trying to figure out what exactly brings in. And like, he'll like rate the tone of the show for the most part.
And, I 100% love that idea.
Yeah.
What are you finding?
Yeah. He's only like a month in, so we don't want to like, or like 6 weeks, I think. But so we don't want to like fuck up any data right now, but it's basically like, if it's like mid cold, if it's real cold, people will come out. If it's real like nice and warm, people will come out. If it's that in between where people are like, oh, it was warm for a day and now it's cold again, they won't. So we're figuring it out.
This is great. Have you ever tracked it personally in terms of less about shows and more about your personal performance? Like, if I ate this, or if I got this much sleep, or I drank this much. You see what I mean?
Yeah, so I'm a two-beer comic.
Which, like okay. Okay, now do you mean, like, you will be drinking your second beer on stage, or you want to have at least two in you, or you want to have no more than two in you, or no beers and then I'll have two? Like, what does two-beer comic mean exactly?
Two-beer comics mean that I would like to have two in me. I can be drinking my second one on stage, that's fine. But, like, at least two drinks, and that's right where I'm, like, the most comfortable. Because I still have really bad stage fright. I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll just get too nervous and fuck it all up.
Does it matter? Okay, if it's a room that, like, you're producing, and you're at that room, and it's essentially home turf, is it the same type of stage fright?
No. And okay. Then, for the most part, I won't. Unless I, you know someone in the audience, or, like, you know, someone bigger is there, you know, if I'm like talking to TJ Miller outside and I'm just like, well, I don't know. I don't want you to watch me. I'm not good enough for you, TJ. You know, it's stupid, but it's, you know, but if it's home turf, I feel like I don't have to get drunk at all. I can go up stone sober and still have a really good time.
What if do you ever travel for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a different state and if you know literally no one in the crowd, better, mm-hmm. worse, same amount of stage fright, how does that play in?
Well, normally I'm going up like in the, so I travel with Hoo Ha a lot. So there's either four or five of us on that trip, and I normally go somewhere around the middle towards the end. And by that time, the girls have already read the room for me, like when I'm watching them, and they're like messing with the tone of it themselves and trying to warm everything up. So like that's, I don't get as nervous because I feel like I know them after that. But from hosting, I'll get a little spooked.
How will reading the room help you if you have someone going up before you and they tell you what to expect? Has that ever actually helped you, or has that just gotten in your head?
I don't think it's them telling me what to expect because I'm already watching them and I know what to expect. And, you know, I know my girls' material so well that, like, tried and true jokes if they didn't work, but they really like the dirty stuff, fucking turn on the dirty faucet, like right up top, get them to like you, warm them up. Like, yeah, but you don't know until somebody else goes, or you're the person that goes up and is like, I'm turning on the dirty faucet. And everyone's like, fuck you. We support the troops. And you're like, ah, come on.
If you, okay, let's do the dirty faucet thing. Now, let's say your friends are like, hey, they like dirty jokes, but you don't like the crowd. Will you intentionally go clean or vice versa?
It depends. I'll probably walk that very fine line. I'll
Okay.
like dip a toe into dirty just to be like, I can do this. Do you guys know I can do this? I can do this,
Okay.
but we're not going to today.
If you walk people, do you mention it ever?
Yeah, I do.
I do too. Why do
I've
you
only
do it?
ever done it once or twice,
Oh,
and
very different people.
I've only ever done it once or twice, and it was kind of like dwindling rooms already. Later sets, the room, like the show's gone on way too long, and you're like, all right, guys, like, are you guys with me? I like you guys. Thank you so much for staying. Those guys are probably Trump supporters. You can just play with that, but like, yeah, I do. Do you?
Yeah, but I never put it on them. Or, sorry, I don't put the blame on the people that walked. I like during my monologue, I was like, I just walked four people. I get it. It's not going well. We're gonna try. And I'm trying to do this thing, especially this past 6 months, I'd say, where I'm not blaming anybody but myself. You can't blame anyone. I don't care what is going on. If they're really, really drunk, that's fine. That's on your job. It's the role of you. If it's because I'm in a bar 90% of the time rather than like a theater, I can't demand silence, nor do I expect to. So for some bullshit, I think it's music related reasons. Like I still like doing shows in like rock clubs versus comedy clubs. I fucking hate performing in comedy clubs.
I fucking hate comedy clubs, dude.
It's
Every
the
fucking time sucks.
but all of those people there in theory want to laugh and they will give you so much more attention than if you're performing at like the Empty Bottle or the Black Cat in DC. But I'd rather perform at the Black Cat in DC, and that doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, I kind of get it because, like, I think, like, I appeal to a rowdier fucking party person as opposed to somebody from Schaumburg who paid $19 and two drinks to watch me do 15 minutes clean. Like,
Yeah, and that's fine, and I don't have anything against the people that the Schaumburg people, but just like it's on me. It's my job to figure out how to make everyone in that room shut the fuck up and laugh in unison. That's really hard to do.
it's really, really hard to do. And it's that same thing I said up top, which is there are some comedians that are like, you should be able to work every crowd, and I think you should just be a little easy on yourself sometimes.
No, I don't.
I don't think it's possible all the time. Like, you can't please everyone all of the time. It's just that old adage, you can't do it.
Yeah, but you at the end of the day, like I wasn't displeased with myself. And looking back, there was like I literally cut the minutes that I did not enjoy. And it's not like I hated those minutes. I just added some stuff that didn't need to be there. It was pointless details. And if it was a written out monologue, those wouldn't have been included. I tried to build a bigger narrative that didn't need to exist. That it was a storytelling issue. I didn't ever really throw anybody under the bus. I didn't say any salacious words just to say salacious words. So I didn't do anything pandering. I just
Right.
wasn't happy with it. And no matter you like baseball, no matter how I played this game again, I still would have lost. I didn't make one wrong move. It's just the whole thing was just off.
Yeah. And that's what
How are your shows this weekend?
my shows were great.
Good.
I hosted this week, which was really nice. And I did a show called Late Late Breakfast. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's
Am.
fantastic. Have you been yet?
No.
Oh, when you're in town, let's just go. It is so perfect and fun and silly. They're great people. But I mean, that's like kind of a silly show. And that's the stuff that I really like because I have like prepared material. Like, I like multimedia comedy. So I just like brought in my easel, brought in my like presentation about like an hour in the life of someone with ADHD. That's the best because you can just go in cold and be like, my material is written and it's presented for me. I love that. Now, I also love hosting the two shows that I did host this weekend, which were Beef, which is a roast battle show, and then Blackout Diaries. Of course, you know Blackout Diaries. And those can just be rowdy and like silly, and you can yell at the audience. And like up there, I feel like a friend, like a teacher friend, instead of like a host.
Now, both if not all three of those shows seem to, based on both the title and the description, attract a certain type of audience member.
Yes, they do. I believe so.
Is that good or bad?
I think that's good. I think it can be bad. I think we've definitely had roast battle shows where like people just think they're really in it. But then, you know, we prepare for it afterwards. We bring them on stage and everyone in the audience or everyone of the comedians makes fun of this audience member, you know, if they think they're too involved. But like, I think for the most part, like when you're hosting a rowdy show, you can be like, yo, dude, like, I hear you. But like, this guy's super funny. So like, let's just tone it down. I'll buy you a drink after the show. And then like, they'll just be fine with it, you know?
What's the drunkest venue or drunkest crowd you've ever had to maintain?
Oh, boy. Friday might be...
like a few days ago?
Yeah, Friday might have been one of the top five for sure. Maybe top three. Because it was at North in Chicago. I don't know if you've been there, but it's a long bar. So, like, you have to shout all the way to the back and get everyone into it. But everyone in the middle is just comics getting fucked up. So
really quick for the listener at home, that's the same type of place as the Wonderland Ballroom in Washington, D.C. So if you've ever been to the Wonderland Ballroom in Washington, D.C., the second floor, that's what At North is like. If you've ever been to At North, now you know what the show in Washington, D.C. is like. Continue.
Oh, my gosh. But, I mean, like, that's pretty bad. I host. I mean, like, I used to run a show in Wrigleyville. Like... I ran a bad show in Wrigleyville. When Hoo Ha first started, it was not a great show. And it was at a club called Beer.
Whoa, stop. It was at a club called Beer?
Beer.
Like B-E-E-R.
Yeah. It was a bar called Beer.
Does this bar exist anymore?
Yeah, no, it's still around. It's on Clark, just south of Wrigley. And it's real trash heap. But, like, they had a big garage door instead of, like, a front of the building. So they would open it up and drunks would just, like, Wrigleyville drunks would just walk in off the street and want to, like, talk. And it was a nightmare. It was a fucking nightmare. I couldn't be happier to be out of Wrigleyville.
It's called Beer on Clark.
Beer on Clark.
Whose idea was it to have a comedy show in a garage at a place called Beer on Clark, stone's throw from Wrigley Field?
That would be our former producer, Erin Lane. She was bartending there at the time.
Okay, well, that's different. I get that.
Yeah, so...
If you're listening to this show and you use the app Yelp, you can get $1 for a grandpa can at Beer on Clark, so check that out.
A grandpa can?
I don't know what that means. I'm clicking on it now. That's it. It just says grandpa can. Beer on Clark, everybody. It's a good thing.
They had insane deals there. Like, you could get a tall boy and two shots of Jaeger for, I think, $4.
Jesus Christ.
That was our special. That was our first special. Two Jaeger shots and a tall boy.
Here's the thing, though. Did you have fun doing those shows? Because, yeah, they sound like nightmares, but at the same time, they sound incredibly fun.
They were bonding moments for the producers.
How old were you?
I was 26.
So you were definitely old enough to know better.
Yeah, I was definitely old enough to know better. But I wasn't in a position in the comedy scene, and this was the first show that I produced, to, like, know what the mistakes were. So that was my learning process, was, like, going to the worst bar that we found, the first one that we found. And then second mistake was going to Rocket Burger Bar across from Wrigley Field and making the same mistake but in a nicer room. And, like... yeah. So, I mean, those are my stepping stones for sure.
What did you make any mistakes that you could remember this weekend? Friday at Beef, Saturday at Blackout, or Sunday at Late Late Breakfast?
My flipping my pages on my thing was really slow. I needed to get tabs for them. That made me really upset that the jokes weren't going fast enough. Other than that, no.
That's really good.
They were two very well done shows. So I have great producers, though. I have great co-producers, and I have interns for Hoo Ha, and not that they were there, but normally they are. And so I'm used to running like a pretty tight ship.
What do your interns for Hoo Ha, what do they do?
They're with us when any producer can't make something, which is rare, but like, so that we'll have them run the door for our show. No big deal. If they want to help set up, that's great. We repay them with stage time, paid stage time, anytime that we can. And like, you know, all of our interns at some point graduate into producers.
That's awesome.
If they stick around. So yeah, and they're great. They're super fucking funny.
Now, I feel like I should already know this, and I think I already do. Hoo-Ha is 100% women, right?
100% women, yeah.
Got it. Beef is not 100% women, though.
Beef is two women.
Okay.
And five boys.
And do you have any interns for Beef?
No, no interns for Beef. No interns for any other show.
Blackout Diaries doesn't have any?
No.
Part of me wants to try to get interns for Blackout Diaries just so when some college kid has to have course credit and they have to ask, how did you get course credit? And they have to say Blackout Diaries.
It would be so fucking great, dude. I would be so about that. If I would have gone to college and like seen that internship, like posted on my like arts admin page, I would have gone berserk.
It would have been amazing. If I saw Sean Flannery perform comedy when I was in college, I would have been like, this guy's my idol. And then I would have never moved from Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like that when I first saw Sean. When I like came onto the scene, I was like, this is the funniest man I've ever seen in my life. Like, he's so perfectly crafted and like never fucks anything up. And is at the same time never connecting with the audience. Like, he's literally just in his own world. Just like, and then we went to Cleveland. Can you believe it? Did I tell you I asked him why he talks out of the side of his mouth?
No, you didn't.
Yeah. I was drunk one night and I was just like, what is this about? Did you have a stroke? And he was like, no, my wife said I talk too loud. So I feel like if I point it away from her, it won't be so bad.
And it just stuck.
It just stuck. He's just too loud.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Okay, a few more questions about bad shows.
Okay, a few more questions about bad shows.
I was on the stage during a bad show, but that's the thing. I don't think I made an intentionally uncomfortable, therefore it's not a bad show. It was just a show that wasn't good.
Okay.
What do you do as a performer when you're watching someone, it doesn't have to be at a show, like a comedy show, it could be like at a wedding, it could be at a conference, it could be in a work meeting, and their performance is making you uncomfortable. Do you have any coping mechanisms as a performer to get through that and be more comfortable?
Oh, my God. I just dealt with this a couple of weeks ago. My friend and co-producer ended an anniversary show, and he was supposed to do 20 minutes. The show had already been 2 hours. He did 40 minutes. He walked 90% of the audience. And at the end of it, the comics had all gravitated to the back and were just pacing around, just like, he's got to fucking stop, dude. That's got to be it. That wasn't it. He keeps going. And, like, all of us were going through, like, various stages of, like, grief, which was, like, one guy was just sitting there, like, kind of, like, solemn and sad, and another one was just, like, punching his hand, and another one was laughing hysterically because it was so uncomfortable and so bad, and, like, none of us... Like, just going back and forth, just like, I don't think I've ever seen a bomb this bad. I've never seen a bomb this bad. And at the end, when he finally got off stage, we all just left. Like, no one could stick around and, like, look him in the face and be like, what the fuck was that, dude?
So the answer is no, you have no coping mechanisms.
No, because that was one of the nights that I was not drinking or smoking. And so, like, I couldn't go outside for a cigarette, and it was cold anyways, and I didn't want to drink to be like, okay, like, maybe we'll forget this. It was the absolute worst.
Did you drink over the weekend at these three shows?
Oh, yeah.
Did you have fun?
I had a great time, but turned in early both nights.
That's good, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, J-Mo, my boyfriend, had a show after Blackout Diaries. We Still Like You. And that's a 10 p.m. show. And I got out at like 9:30 and started driving down. And I was like, no. We're not going to do this. Like, it's just time for bed. It's okay.
So you're able to go from on stage to in bed within a reasonable amount of time.
within like a half an hour. I'm always fine with just coming home.
Really?
I don't really have FOMO all that much. I don't think everyone else is actually having that much fun.
I am.
Dude, really?
Yeah.
Don't. They're not having that much fun.
No, 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 I apologize. I don't have FOMO. I am having that much fun.
Oh, no. I mean, when I'm out, I'm having fun.
Yeah.
But I don't need to continue it and try and, like, catch the dragon of hanging out with my friends, you know?
Sure. Okay. I think it's different because now the majority of shows I do are on weekends intentionally, so it's a little bit easier to stay out as late because there's, you know, to really worry as much. And also, I'm doing them way few and far between compared to, like, the 3 times, 4 times, 5 times a week.
Yeah.
You're a lot different. You're doing this way more often.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like, I have shows every Tuesday, and then I'll have shows, you know, throughout the week, definitely on the weekend. Although I think I'm free this weekend. Yes, I am. I am free this weekend. I am very happy about that.
You're happy to have a weekend off.
Oh, always. Always.
What will you
do? Because, like, that's when my regular friends are around. Like, that's when they want to hang out. And that's, yeah, it sucks when I have to miss a birthday party because I have a show.
Yeah. I have to miss my show next month because my wife has a race.
Has a race?
Yeah, she's doing a try. So I will have guest hosts for my show.
See, that's really nice. I wish I could do that. And that's why I like having, like, a lot of producers to, like, fill in spots and stuff like that. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it also gives you a reason not to have to do your show, which is weird because, like, it's supposed to be the thing that you love the most, but at the same time...
It is the thing that I love the most, but, like, people have kids and they get sick of those, too. Like, sometimes you need to get a babysitter. It's okay.
That's true. You got any shows to plug?
Let's see. My band will be at Shuba's on the 12th. So if you want to come down at like 9, we'll be playing.
Now you are currently not on the SoundCloud, is that, or the Bandcamp? It's still just the demo, is that correct?
No, we have a Bandcamp.
I thought you weren't on those songs.
No, I am on those songs now. They were updated.
I apologize.
No, it's not your fault. Like,
what is the name of the band?
It's called The Gunny.
The Gunny.
G-U-N-N-Y, The Gunny.
The Gunny is a tribute to the film Gummo. No one will laugh at that.
I got it.
On Thursday, May 12th at Shuba's, they sound like The National, which means that they are playing the appropriate venue, which is Shuba's.
That is absolutely correct.
Across the street from the late, great Uncle Fun.
Oh, God, I miss it so much.
Do you really?
I have so many things in this apartment. There's one right here.
What do you have? What are you showing? You're showing. Oh, it's a crocodile skull.
Uh huh. Uncle Fun's.
Uncle Fun. Why did you pluralize Uncle Fun?
Uncle Fun's place gave me that. Does that work?
Sure.
Grammar's not my strong suit.
That's a good plug. That's a fun plug. This is your first show at the band, is that correct?
This is our first show at the band, yeah.
So. Yeah, you definitely needed more nights off, so you joined a band.
Yeah. I had a crisis a couple of fucking months ago, and I was just like, I can't keep doing everything. I can't be everything. I'm not Superwoman. I was like, I'm going to quit the band. And then was like, I need an outlet for the music or whatever that's inside of me.
So what will you be doing in the band?
I play keyboard and I sing.
You're a stereotype.
I know. So yeah, if people want to come out, I think we're almost sold out.
Are you really almost sold out?
No, isn't that weird? It's like a band, we're opening for a band who's having like a release show.
Who's the band that's headlining?
Kerosene Stars.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I know. I know. My old band was called Free Drugs. We were so
That's a great band name. That's a great band name.
We were a great band. That was a really fucking fun band.
Why is that no longer a band?
Oh, because I dated the keyboardist for 2 years and we broke up.
Oh, is this the one that you told me? Oh, okay, never mind. Oh, yeah. What a perfectly named band. I'm going to cut that from the podcast too.
Yeah, good. You go ahead. It's no big deal because people should listen to Free Drugs because we were great.
All right. So go see
Yeah.
Go see The Gunny, who is a real band. playing at a real venue with a band that sounds like it's existed for the past 20 years and no one knows if it's real, and it'll do just fine and no one will remember their name. But it's fine, because who the fuck am I talking? I'm still doing fucking talk shows in the fucking dive bars around the country. So I'm not throwing shade here. I'm just, it's all to no shade.
We're all doing fine.